Well, we want to welcome you this morning to our January 2017 HPV QI conference. We will be hearing from Dr. Cosgrove and Deanna Kepka this morning. We're going to turn the time over to Dr. Cosgrove.
Good morning. This is Bill Cosgrove. I want to apologize. December sort of got away from us, and it's clear from as we look across all of our 51 different docs who are participating, nobody entered any data. So looks like January is going to be our real start. So what happens in January is sort of two things. We need to upload baseline data, and I'll explain kind of what I mean by that, and then really start the quality improvement part of this process. As far as baseline data, there's sort of two ways to look at it. And one is a state level baseline data. We've asked you to approach your state registry and ask for office-specific or provider-specific data for your HPV success. And that won't work with the KEDEV system. So we want you to get that data. We want you to record that data. And we want you to send us that data because we would like to have state-level HPV data at the start of our process and at the end of the process. Now, state-level data isn't going to be responsive enough or quick enough to let us know on a month-to-month basis whether or not we're improving or not. So the actual KEDA data aggregator that we're going to be used, the baseline data for that is actually just 10 patients. And we talked last month, you can randomize it any way you'd like. You could just take the 11 and 12-year-olds that walk into your office and call them your baseline. You can take, say, the first one every day for the next 10 days. You can decide to do it any way you want. The main issue is we want it random. We don't want you to cherry pick. We don't want you to pick the ones that you know are going to be helpful to you. We just want the next, you know, any 10 patients. And then we want you to upload that data into the KEDA database. Now, if you go to page two of that, there's the login screen. It just, this is a screenshot of your login screen, so you can't work at it. But essentially, you go to the KEDATA.org District 8 HPV website, which you already know about, and you log in with your AAP number and your password. Then you go to Project Home, and then at the top it says HPV data collection something site. When you go there, then if you come down a little bit to the next slide, it'll show you what that looks like after you clicked on it. So we go to log in, go to Project Home. Then the next thing we do is go to the data collection site. And when you click on that, it leads you to a small box on the right that says enter data. The top of the page says enter chart data. Then it says HPV initiation data collection tool. A cycle status and charts entered, 0, 10 required. Now the next line down gets immediately confusing. It says chart number 1-1 with a plus sign. And what that 1+1-1 really means is this is cycle 1 and chart 1. So when you are entering data, you are going to be at this part. And then if you come down a little bit on that page, it gives you two numbers. To begin, at the bottom of the page, it says, enter the number of charts you will be entering data from, and that will be 10. And then identify the total number of patients who have documented in their chart that they have received dose 1 of the HPV, and that's just your numerator. So you pick 10 patients, and then you count up how many actually had their first dose of HPV. We're not counting completion. We're not counting second or third dose. We're just counting how many people got that first dose. So it's simply a numerator and a denominator. Now, that's the data that has to be entered into the KEDA database. And if you then click submit at the bottom left, and when you do that, that enters your data into the KETA database. So that will be the data of your baseline, a random 10 charts, and how you've done before you start messing with your process. Now, after you enter the data and it's completed, then you'll get another box that allows you to annotate your data. So the annotation is how you keep notes about what it really means. So you'll have a ratio of 6 out of 10. And then somewhere in the annotation, when you get to the, after you've entered it, you're allowed to annotate it. And when you annotate it, you just say that's your baseline before you mess with the process. Now, that's clearly too simple for us to really make good quality decisions about improving our process. So what we really want to do is we want you to enter that data into KETA system so that you get MOC credit. But that's not going to help you much as far as improving your own process. So there's really three numbers you have to keep track of. One is how many kids show up who are eligible. Anybody who's between their birthday when they turn 11 and their birthday when they turn 13. So any 11 and 12-year-old are eligible, and you want to keep track of how many eligibles show up in your office. The second number you'd like to keep track of is how many of those did you offer the vaccine to? And that means if you got to the end of the day and you saw that teenager for a sprained ankle and you didn't offer the vaccine, you just keep track of that. So you know what it is you're doing. And then the third number is how many of those that you offered to did you really succeed in getting them to start their vaccine? What quality improvement is about is taking a good, hard, honest look at what it is we really do, tweak it a little bit, see what if we can change it a little bit, keep track of what the changes are. So you sort of have to do that offline. The KETA data is not going to help us much there. Keep track of that. But what I would suggest is that you send them to us. And we're not trying trying to be any way judgmental about what people try or don't try. What we really want to do is we want to capture enough information so that 55 of us can tweak things, try things, and see what works, and then share that across all 55 of us to see if we can make things better. The other part that I want to mention is that there are some documents in a place that's called My Documents, where we will give you paper forms or online forms, but you can download them as paper forms for PDSA cycles, where you can keep notes. But again, we would suggest that you take those notes, talk about them with your team, and also upload them to us so that we can, as a group of 55 of us, keep track of what's working with somebody so that we can try it across other offices. Be happy to answer any questions.
Let me just clarify, the forms that you upload are on your own tab, and there's a way for you to put the forms into your filing system. You will need to enter your notes on a Word document and then upload them from there. All right, I'm going to ask for questions.
Alisa, this is Diane. I have a question. This may be better answered by Dr. Cosgrove. So could you please clarify that with the KETA and with the definition that we are only looking at initiating HPV dose 1 in ages 11 and 12, if within the month you have zero patients who are ages 11 and 12, that you don't need to worry about 13 and above? Can you confirm that's true?
Yes, that is correct.
So sometimes the denominator will be zero.
The denominator will be zero, and the numerator will obviously be zero too. If you only see a few 11 and 12-year-olds, then just count every one of them.
We're talking about any encounter. We're not just talking about actual well visits. We're saying anytime you have an 11 and 12-year-old who come in, then you count them. But if you have zero show up in the month that are 11 and 12, even if they're 10 or 13, don't count them.
Correct. Yeah, that's
okay. Cool. If that does happen, please send me an email at alisa@aaputah.org. Your information is still valuable, even if 10 charts are not available to you in any given month. Any other questions?
Sorry, this is Laura Nicholson from Billings. So do I understand that we're doing this month without making any other interventions? This is sort of baseline without constructing any other interventions.
Correct. This is really just our baseline before we start tweaking and improving. So this is just a place to start.
Okay. And Dr. Anderson asked, can we be reminded of the dates that we're entering and closing the cycles? Yes, they are a month proper. So you have the entire month and the charts will be closed on the last day of the month. Any other questions?
Sorry, before you said December, now you mean January?
Now we mean January. Yeah, December got away from us, partly because it took most of December before everybody got their logins and access from AAP. So where we thought we were going to do December as the baseline, we are now going to have to do January as the baseline. We still will have enough time to complete all of the cycles and get all of the MOC credit.
I think Dr. Hodgson is asking if the KEDA system is now running and available to input data, and the answer is yes, and it was noted in the presentation first PowerPoint slide. We will turn the time over to Deanna at this point.
Hello, everyone. I hope you can hear me. Happy New Year. So I'm Dr. Deanna Kepka. I'm a population scientist at Huntsman Cancer Institute. I'm also an assistant professor at the College of Nursing at the University of Utah, and I consider myself a health services researcher, and my focus has been improving HPV vaccination in the Intermountain West. So I'm also working with Laura Martell. She's the cancer control coordinator for the Intermountain West HPV Vaccination Coalition. And the two of us are here to support you in improving HPV vaccination at your clinics. And I'm going to talk a little bit about today about the goals for the HPV advocates and how we can best assist you. So this is a little description of our Intermountain West Coalition. We have more than 230 members in about 10 states. We started off as a small partnership between Utah, Nevada, and Idaho, and have expanded over the past couple of years. We were funded by the National Cancer Institute to do an environmental scan to really try and understand what's happening in terms of barriers to HPV vaccination in our region and how we can work together on using a multidisciplinary partnership to improve advocacy and education around HPV vaccination in our region. So we have a very diverse cohort of coalition members, and most of you have been put on our coalition. If you still were not added, please let us know and we can add you, because we're a resource for you. If you don't want to be a part of it, please let Laura Martell or myself know and we will remove you. We try to limit the amount of emails, but we at least set a monthly conference call, and we have about 1 to 2 newsletters or news releases a month related to current events around HPV vaccination. So why is this coalition so important? We're not doing that well in the Intermountain West. If you look on this map right here, you could see that we're among the lowest cohort of the nation for receipt of first dose HPV vaccination. And on the bottom, you can see where your state is. So of our partnerships for the AAP Hub and Spoke initiative, most of us are doing quite terrible. Wyoming, Utah, Montana, Nevada, we have some stuff to learn from Nevada. They're doing better than us by far. But I know they've had a lot of funding and support and a lot of activity around Immunize Nevada, their coalition in Nevada for improving HPV vaccination. This is how we're all doing in terms of boys' vaccination. So you could see Utah, Nevada, Montana were quite similar. We're doing poorly, bottom half of the nation. And then Wyoming, we have, again, in the lowest quintile for the nation. So this is why it's so important that we work together and that we learn from each other. And we build partnerships because we're a largely rural region of the U.S. And that's why this coalition has been so important to be a multi-state coalition. So the point of the HPV advocate. So this is Dr. Cosgrove's vision, and I've been talking with him about it quite a bit. His feeling and my feeling is that pediatricians just do not interact with HPV-related cancer survivors. And because of that, there's a disconnect in terms of prioritizing this vaccine for their patients when they lack that connection with patients who have been affected harshly by HPV infection leading to precancer or cancer. So because of that, we would like to give you more exposure to the experiences of HPV cancer survivors, either HPV-related cancer like cervical cancer, anal cancer, or head and neck cancers, or precancers, cervical dysplasia, or parents or families or loved ones of people who've passed away due to HPV-related cancer. So our goal is to really do our best. It's going to be a challenge because, as I mentioned before, we're a largely rural region, but to try and assign an HPV advocate to your practice. We're going to look for people who are affiliated with our coalition, either coalition members or contacts that we have through current coalition active partners such as health departments, survivorship communities, actual HPV cancer survivor participants, and try and assign them to your practice. And our goal for this person is we would like them to, within the period of 6 months, visit your practice 2 times. We would like them to meet with your team and just personalize the experience of having been diagnosed and receiving treatment for an HPV-related cancer or precancer, and just give you a little bit more of the human aspect for how that affects an individual and their family. So we want to have you listen to their stories through 2 meetings, 1 meeting within the next couple of months, and then another meeting later in the spring to kind of revitalize energy around this. So I'm going to be doing my best to find Laura and myself to find either HPV cancer survivors or parents of individuals or spouses of individuals who've been affected by HPV-related cancer. One concern I have is for Montana and Wyoming, we don't have as many active participants from those regions, so it's going to be much more challenging for us to find HPV advocates. But I have some ideas, and I'd love to hear from you right now. I'd like to have a little discussion on how we can best help you if we can't find an HPV advocate in your region. But before I get to that, I'd like to mention that for the HPV advocate, if you are able to find one, we're willing to provide that advocate with an honorarium to reimburse them for their time and to pay for transportation, because we don't want this to be a burden or too much of a commitment for them, and we want to show respect for their time. So the Intermountain West HPV Vaccine Coalition can provide honorariums for the advocates for their time and can help with travel reimbursement if they're traveling quite a ways to get to your practice. So some options we have for regions where we are unable to find an advocate. One idea as I have is we can do it remotely. We can do either like a webinar type meeting or a meeting like this one where we have a couple HPV cancer survivors share their stories. You can ask them questions. We could also arrange for an in-person meeting if people had resources to come together and learn from HPV cancer survivors. So I'd like to hear from you about your thoughts on this. I'm seeing this note right now. We do have film videos, and I'll show you at the end of the slides. I included a link to videos that were put together by the American Cancer Society HPV Vaccination Roundtable. But would anyone else like to share their thoughts about how we could best serve practices where we may not be able to find an advocate who can meet with you in person? So I'm seeing from Dr. Hodgson that working with the cancer centers, and I like that idea. And if you're able to locally identify an advocate, please also connect with us, because we want to be able to offer them an honorarium if they're interested in accepting that and pay for transportation if they need that. Any other ideas? Would people be interested in us organizing a webinar that includes a panel of HPV cancer survivors that could be participated in remotely? So Dr. Anderson says a webinar would be helpful. Another person, that would be fine. So we will look into that, yes. We'll try and see if we can get a more interactive option. We'll work on getting the advocates locally, but we'll also have a more interactive distance option to get more experiences about individuals who've been affected by HPV cancer. So please be in touch with Laura and myself regarding the resources that you locally have and your need for us to find resources for you. And we will work on planning that webinar. And also, again, please connect, if you do find advocates in your region, please connect them with us so we can provide some compensation for their time. Okay, so here's just an overview of our resources. Again, please contact us. We're going to be looking at our partnership list and try and get in touch with our partners in Nevada, in Utah, and as best as we can, Montana and Wyoming, to find advocates for your region. And we'll also be organizing this webinar panel discussion, and we'll try and invite a number of different types of HPV-related cancer survivors or people who have been affected by it. And again, as being members of our coalition, you'll get monthly updates and news related to HPV vaccination, and you'll have access to our webinars. We also do monthly conference calls, the first Wednesday of every month. And in addition, we host different speakers. And in January, so that's now, I guess in about 10 days, we're going to be hosting Dr. Alecia Prescott, who's going to be talking about promoting the HPV vaccine to diverse religious communities. And she's from Ohio State. So here's just some highlights of our coalition's other work, which you can peruse. And if you're interested in getting involved in any of these, please talk to us. One is we're working on developing a large multi-level HPV vaccination intervention in our region. And here's the videos that people are discussing. So if you go to this link right here, HPV videos, this is a series. There's 12 survivor videos that are available on YouTube that are survivors of different types of HPV-related cancer, and they're talking about their experiences. And then there's also inclusion of oncologists and a gynecologist and the primary care perspective related to preventing HPV-related cancer. So they may be helpful for your practice. So thank you so much, everyone, for your time. Happy New Year. Again, we're here to help you reach your goals.
All right, we're going to turn the time over to Dr. Cosgrove to conclude our conference. Thank you, Dr. Kepkep, for your great work and resources for our group.
Okay, this is Bill Cosgrove again. And thanks, Diana. Essentially, when we have talked about this in our kickoff conference and before, and that is, I've been practicing for 33 years, and I have never had to deal with cervical cancer or HPV-related cancers in my practice. And the problem as a pediatrician is we're the ones who can make a difference here, but we never see the outcome. And we have to keep it real. And I've looked at these videos, and on film it comes out real. But what really makes it real is having a person across the table from you, a person in the same room who talks about the agony of just an abnormal pap smear. When a young lady is told that she's got precancerous cells on her cervix, it changes her life until she gets the final reprieve from her doctor 6 months later that the second or the repeat pap smear was normal. And that woman lives in agony and fear for that 6 months. And it's an especially isolating fear because it isn't a thing that she talks to about easily with her friends. And so the cost of HPV is real, and we have to feel it emotionally in order to do the difference of making become real for our patients. And so I encourage you to watch the videos, and we are really going to try hard to get a person in the room with you so you can talk about how urgent and real this is, even though it seems invisible to a pediatrician. I would like to open the discussion up to anybody who has ideas about what we should do next. And that can be ideas about how to change your practice. It could be ideas about how to measure what's going on in your practice. It could be ideas about what you're going to try first. Any thoughts?
So we are in Bozeman. We've identified our initial, I think we've identified our data prior to making any changes, and then have started with some changes from a nursing staff so that they will huddle every morning and identify those kids who fall in that proper age group and notify the physician that they will have two or three patients on their schedule that day and where they stand with their current immunizations for HPV. And that was our initial change to try to at least increase the awareness on a day-to-day basis.
Excellent. And trying to have someone else identify the patients, and then you just have to react. Physicians, even pediatricians, are more reactive than proactive. And so instead of having you have the burden of taking care of whatever happens in your practice, 15 or 20 medical issues that you have to deal with that day, trying to remember to also to do this. If your nurse identifies and just gives you a note, then you all you have to do is just react, and makes it easier. And it also makes the job better, more likely to be done. And it involves your team. So then when your nurse identifies somebody, you get to celebrate your nurse as also being a participant, protecting this child from possible cancer.
All right, fabulous. We are going to close our conference call for January and want to thank you all for spending an hour with us this morning. We appreciate your participation in our project and want to be a resource if you need help. Please contact me, Alisa, at aaputah.org with any questions, or you're welcome to call me at any time. And I just want to remind you that if you have not already, please use the link to sign in so that we have an accurate accounting of everyone that participated. Participation is, again, how the MOC credit will be administered. So I need to know that you participated. If you are not live, you can still sign in. Again, thank you for joining us, and we're going to sign off. Happy New Year.